At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread, and the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it has up to 19 grams protein, 11 to 32 grams of fiber, or just 0 to 5 grams net carbs. But it does. Hero Bread. No compromises, just loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with flavor. Right now, get 10% off at hero.co with code IHEART. That's hero.co, code IHEART. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
Welcome back to On the Case, the podcast. I'm Paula Zahn, and thanks for joining us for Pod 42, A Cracked Alibi. Tonight, we're on the case in Omak, Washington, 45 miles south of the Canadian border. The rustic city with a population of about 5,000 became the unlikely setting for the murder of 51-year-old Sandy Bauer. The beloved mother was found strangled to death inside her own apartment. As detectives struggled to put together evidence that might lead them to a suspect, Sandy's friends and family were forced to consider a chilling question. Was one of their neighbors a cold-blooded killer? March 6th, 1998. It was 3:05 on a crisp Friday afternoon when a troubling call came in to the Omak Police Department. Officer Jim Bushko.
The caller reported a possible murder, so I activated my license sirens and went there as fast as possible.
When Officer Bushko arrived, he was met by the heartbroken mother of the victim, Lillian Bauer. The rookie investigator quickly realized he wasn't prepared for what he was about to experience.
When I got to the house, the mother was obviously distraught. She was holding her head, you know, crying and sobbing and wailing.
It was the first homicide of the young officer's career, and he had never seen that kind of raw anguish before.
I couldn't imagine the suffering and the sorrow and just the emptiness that she was feeling. And it just kind of chokes me up right now, actually. It was very hard. It was very hard.
Despite her grief, Lillian somehow managed to compose herself enough to give Officer Bushko the details. She had found her daughter in the basement apartment they had built in her home.
The mom had been trying to get a hold of her daughter, didn't get a response. So she went downstairs where her daughter lives.
Lillian called out to her daughter, but there was no answer. Then she walked into Sandy's bedroom.
She sees Sandy laying in bed, the bedding pulled up to her neck and two pillows over her head. And she pulls off the pillow, and she sees Sandy's head with blood coming out of her nose and her mouth.
Sandy was clearly dead. After the emotional conversation with Sandy's mother, Officer Bushko went down to the crime scene.
Immediately, I see Sandy laying on the bed. She was naked. There was clothing on the ground with blood spatter on it. There was blood spatter that was on the wall. It was obvious to me that this was homicide.
As he went in for a closer look, he took note of the position of Sandy's body.
She was laying face down with her head to the right. Her right arm was kicked out to the side, almost like a 45-degree angle. But her left arm was pinned underneath her stomach area. That is a very odd position.
Crime scene analysts were called to the scene as detectives tried to piece together how the attack unfolded. Sergeant Frank Rogers.
Two things that jumped out at me is the blood on the ground and then the blood that went across the headboard. You could tell somebody had put her in the bed and covered her up.
The motive for the crime seemed even clearer.
She had some red stretch pants that were inside out with one of the stockings still in it. She had a white bra that was ripped in the front. She had some panties that were on the ground. They were ripped in places. This was a sexual assault murder.
The evidence told a grim story of Sandy's final moments alive.
The person that was doing this had rage. He had no control over his emotions. He was there for something, and he was going to get it no matter what. And he punished this poor lady. I mean, he beat her. He punched her. He slammed her to the ground.
As investigators continued to try and analyze the scene, something caught Officer Bushko's attention.
The white rag that was sitting there bunched up in the right corner of the bed, that was out of place. I'm thinking he used the white rag to clean up afterwards and left it right there on the corner of the bed.
The rag, bedding, and Sandy's clothing were sent to the lab for testing, while detectives continued to process the rest of her apartment.
There was a little work area with a computer on it. It was odd because the computer was left on. There was a bag of carrots there that were open, and there was a cigarette in the ashtray in the little part that holds the cigarette in place.
Police believe those clues indicated that Sandy had been using the computer when the attack began. And after being taken by surprise by her killer, she was quickly overwhelmed by a man who was there for one reason.
The rest of the apartment was in perfect condition.
Although there had been no signs of forced entry, police noted that the door that led into the apartment from outside had been left slightly ajar. Investigators believe the open door was a critical clue.
My gut told me she knew her killer.
As police began their investigation, Sandy's two sons were just finding out their mother was dead. Sandy's son, Frank Adams.
We thought it was like an auto accident or something until we finally were told actually what happened. She's been murdered. It was a big shock. We just couldn't believe it.
Sandy's sons had a hard time processing what they were being told by the police. Sandy's son, Nick Adams.
My mom was gone. It's hard to process something like that.
To her children, it seemed impossible that their vibrant and charismatic mother had been killed during a brazen attack. She had no known enemies and seemed to become friends with everyone she met. And she had a personality that lit up the room.
Always happy. She just loved life and loved people, loved her kids.
She was always happy, go lucky, busy, caring and outgoing, and she was a wonderful mother, that's for sure.
Sandy's sons weren't the only ones who struggled to understand what had happened. Sandy was a familiar face to everyone in town. She had been the owner of Omak's most popular pub, the Caribou Inn.
It's a small community. The Caribou was kind of the hub. Pretty much everybody came there. Everybody loved her. It was a hardship on the whole community.
Sandy's inner circle knew that the doting mother and grandmother had been going through a transitional phase in her life. Financial struggles had led to her losing the Caribou Inn, and she was working hard to find a new way to support herself.
She was trying to move on and change her life a little bit and wanted to do something different.
She was just taking some classes. She wanted to go into nursing.
Sandy had also recently moved into the basement of her parents' home. They had remodeled the space into an apartment with its own entrance. The new living arrangement allowed Sandy to save some money and take care of her ailing father. It appeared like the perfect situation for her to start over, but it was all taken before she could truly enjoy it.
She didn't get much of a chance. She'd only been there 3 months.
Before police questioned those closest to Sandy, they hoped the medical examiner would help them gain a deeper insight into the last moments of Sandy's life. The autopsy report was eye-opening.
He determined that she died through asphyxiation and strangulation. He had strangled her with a lot of force. There was very severe bruising on the backside of the head and on the side of the head.
The medical examiner placed her time of death around midnight, which matched the time her parents had heard the loud noise. Based on her injuries, it appeared that Sandy had put up a strong fight.
She had defensive wounds on the ground, kicking and flailing and hitting the bed frame underneath. So she got gouges out of her knees and her elbows from trying to fight for her life. She wasn't a big woman, but she was a strong woman, strong-willed. And you knew that she gave every ounce of her soul fighting very hard to survive.
Detectives believe that due to the fierce struggle, Sandy's killer would undoubtedly have been injured as well.
I don't see how he couldn't have been. I don't see how he couldn't have had some scratches somewhere on his body.
The medical examiner also found evidence that confirmed Sandy had been the victim of a sexual assault.
There was some biological evidence recovered, so that we know she was sexually abused, raped, during the time of the incident.
Sandy's injuries helped police further develop their theory of the crime.
We knew that whoever was in that apartment had to know Sandy. She had let her guard down. And for whatever reason, he hit her probably right away, trying to knock her down, and then the fight was on.
Based on the evidence, it appeared the struggle had actually ended with Sandy being strangled to death on the floor. Her killer then placed her lifeless body onto the bed, covering her with blankets and pillows. Investigators believe that was an important clue.
To me, that's a sign of somebody that has a connection with a person.
And those closest to Sandy thought that there was one person who fit that description to a T. Sandy's boyfriend, Frank Trotter.
He was definitely one of our thoughts.
I didn't have any questions except for, where's Frank Trotter?
Sandy's sons told police that Trotter and their mother had a volatile relationship. The couple had run the Caribou Inn together. But after they lost control of the pub, Frank had left town to visit family in California. Friends said Sandy had been expecting him back from his trip on the night of her murder.
Sandy had mentioned that she was expecting her boyfriend to come into town any minute. And he's a very jealous, a very possessive person.
And there was another reason Sandy was apprehensive about Trotter's return that night.
She mentioned she was going to break up with him.
Sandy wanted to be done with this relationship. She wasn't in the mood. She was happy. Things were going well. She was just doing her studies. She was waiting for him to come home so that she could just end it and get on with her life.
Police thought the breakup could have been the trigger for the murder.
The boyfriend became our primary suspect right off the bat.
Investigators believe the pieces of a complicated puzzle were quickly falling into place.
He looked guilty. My gut told me we'll solve this quick.
It just all kind of starts to fit. Boyfriend came home. She opened the door for him. Boom, he goes into a rage. Everything pointed to him.
On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment. This episode of On the Case is sponsored by Vinted. Do you have clothes you keep saying you wear but never do? Do you feel guilty about clearing the clutter out of your closet because it feels like you're flushing hard-earned money down the drain? What if I told you there was an app that could help you solve both problems while putting money in your pocket at the same time? It's called Vinted. Simply download the app for free, list your clothes, and those problems are solved. And best of all, you keep the full listing price. There are no seller fees. Once your items sell, Vinted provides a prepaid shipping label with flexible drop-off options that fit your schedule. There is no easier way to refresh your wardrobe with money you earn by clearing out your closet. Download the Vinted app for free and start listing. With no seller fees, you keep every dollar you earn. That's V-I-N-T-E-D. Vinted. See what's hiding in your closet. You might be surprised by just how much you can earn. Give your clothes a second life. Download the Vinted app for free today with no seller fees in the U.S. for a limited time.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread or a fully loaded bagel. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it's up to 19 grams of protein, but it is. You wouldn't believe it has 11 to 32 grams of fiber, but it does. Hero Bread makes loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with taste, but without all the net carbs. We're talking 0 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. With Hero Bread, there are no compromises, just flavor. There's none of the stiff baked goods you'd expect from better-for-you brands. There's just the soft, fluffy bread you crave. Plus, small batch drops of indulgent favorites, like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero croissant and 3-gram net carb Hero pain au chocolat. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code IHEART at checkout. That's code IHEART at hero.co. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
The theory and the couple's rocky relationship made finding Trotter a top priority for police. But before police could track down Trotter, he contacted law enforcement on his own. Officer Jim Bushko.
I actually received a phone call from him that evening.
Officer Bush on the line with you.
Oh, how are we doing?
Without prompting, Frank announced he was calling from a town 540 miles away from Omak.
I'm at Klamath Falls, Oregon, and at a pay phone. I'm outside. Saw the guard. I've been trying to get a hold of Sandy.
He was like, my Sandy, where is my Sandy? I heard she was killed.
The timing of Frank's call and his odd tone only heightened investigators' suspicions.
It was just not the normal reaction you would expect from somebody, almost like it was acting.
Sergeant Frank Rogers.
I don't even know how to describe it to you. His demeanor, his actions, he made himself look guilty.
To detectives on the case, everything about the conversation appeared to be carefully planned.
It seemed like he was trying to establish his alibi after he had possibly committed the murder.
Trotter also seemed to know more about the crime than he should, including details of how Sandy had died.
One thing that struck me, he said she was raped. I'm like, how do you know this?
Trotter volunteered to come to the station, and as soon as he arrived, his appearance raised red flags.
Oh boy. Yeah, right off the bat, he had what looked like a scratch right on his upper lip, and we all kind of focused on it.
I'm just kind of curious, what happened to your lip right there?
That, I think, happened to probably just sucking on my lip coming up here. It was probably a cold sore or something.
He was constantly licking it. There was constant attention to that lip.
He was constantly nervous, smoked cigarette after cigarette.
Trotter denied being involved in Sandy's murder, but detectives weren't buying his story. Their instincts told them he was lying. But the more they pressed, the more he vehemently proclaimed his innocence. Frank insisted he had started the long drive back from his sister's house in Dixon, California, shortly before Sandy's murder.
And when did you leave Dixon?
I left her home at somewhere around 2:30 in the afternoon from Dixon.
If Trotter was telling the truth, it would have been nearly impossible for him to have killed Sandy in her apartment at midnight, less than 12 hours later. Investigators were skeptical.
We asked him to narrow in his timeline.
In particular, Officer Bushko wanted to see receipts from gas stations along his route. Bushko asked Trotter if he had any receipts and was shocked when Trotter immediately pulled one out.
He has a receipt in the back of his truck in the middle of a book.
Though Trotter thought it would help prove his innocence, the receipt made investigators even more suspicious.
When I get a receipt, I crumble it up or throw it on the floor. This one was in pristine condition. It was folded up. He knew exactly where it was.
The receipt also seemed to be the perfect alibi. It showed that Trotter had paid cash for gas in Dixon, California at 3:32 p.m. That placed him more than 14 hours away from Sandy's home, approximately 11 hours before her murder. Detectives questioned the authenticity of it all.
You're thinking, this guy is working too hard to create an alibi.
And police couldn't understand how he had that one perfect receipt, but couldn't show them any other ones from his trip.
It was so confusing for us, because how do you go from Vacaville, California to Omak and only have one receipt? But this receipt is in pristine condition. It was another confusing part of this whole case.
Investigators sent forensic experts to examine Trotter's truck for evidence that might prove he was lying, and they were stunned by what they found.
We did see some blood on the truck.
It was another red flag.
We're thinking, okay, how did it get there?
While the blood was sent to the lab for processing, detectives asked Trotter to take a lie detector test. The results raised a lot of eyebrows.
He was deceptive on the polygraph.
Investigators all came to the same conclusion about Frank Trotter.
We were all convinced that this was our guy.
But to prove he did it, they still had to get past the gas receipt, which placed him hours away. If it was legitimate, it would have made it almost impossible for him to have committed Sandy's murder. Detectives work to verify his statement and authenticate the receipt.
We chased his alibi. I was able to track his entire route, where he got gas, where he stopped. I found evidence. Yep, he did do this at this time.
Even the blood found on his truck that appeared so damning was easily explained.
It was not human blood.
In the end, detectives couldn't find any evidence that connected him to Sandy's murder.
After we exhausted all means of, you know, checking out the route, checking his alibis, where he was, Frank was being cooperative. We had gotten blood samples from him. You know, we had gotten hair follicles from him, and he was cooperating.
Frank Trotter was officially eliminated as a suspect. But a cloud of suspicion lingered over him. Many in law enforcement and the community still believed he had gotten away with murder. The whispers may have contributed to Frank leaving town.
He moved to Canada.
And his departure left the investigation back at square one.
We were coming to a dead end. We had contacted numerous people, people that were at the bar that night. We contacted friends and family, but nothing was giving us what we needed. We were coming to the end of the road at that point.
Meanwhile, the pressure to solve the case continued to grow. Sergeant Sean Isaac.
It was very overwhelming. We were getting phone calls daily from the family, from friends, wanting to know what was going on with the investigation.
For investigators, the lack of progress was an enormous weight on their shoulders. One that forced them to reconsider everything they knew about Sandy's murder.
What did we miss? Were we too narrow-minded? Did we fixate on somebody too soon, too fast?
More on The Case, the podcast, after this.
On the Fear Thy Neighbor podcast from ID, we explore true stories told by the victims and their families and discover what can happen when even the most petty neighborhood disputes escalate to horrific heights and pass the point of no return.
I knew something very dark was going on and something very bad was going to happen.
What happens when the person you fear the most is living right next door?
I never would have thought it would have ended that way.
Listen to Fear Thy Neighbor wherever you get your podcasts.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread or a fully loaded bagel. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it's up to 19 grams of protein, but it is. You wouldn't believe it has 11 to 32 grams of fiber, but it does. Hero Bread makes loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with taste, but without all the net carbs. We're talking 0 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. With Hero Bread, there are no compromises, just flavor. There's none of the stiff baked goods you'd expect from better-for-you brands. There's just the soft, fluffy bread you crave. Plus, small batch drops of indulgent favorites, like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero croissant and 3-gram net carb Hero pain au chocolat. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code IHEART at checkout. That's code IHEART at hero.co. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
Thank you. as the days turned into weeks and then months, Sandy's sons started to lose patience. Sandy's son, Nick Adams.
We were very frustrated. It was so long.
Sandy's son, Frank Adams.
I would show up at the sheriff's office and talk to anybody I could, and nobody could help me. Nobody knew anything. We're going to never know who did this.
Officer Jim Bushko.
It was eating me up inside. The family didn't have closure, and it was my first murder. I felt like I let the family down.
But Officer Bushko never forgot about Sandy's case, even after he was promoted to detective. And training he received gave him some new ideas.
After going through my DNA classes, I said, I'd like to work the Bauer case again. And so I went, pulled it out of storage, and I dug into it.
With his chief's blessing, Detective Bushko sent key pieces of physical evidence to the crime lab for testing, including the white rag that had been found on the edge of Sandy's bed.
I knew that white rag, for some reason at the beginning, was going to be key. I just knew that white rag was so important.
Detective Bushko's instincts paid off. The lab discovered an unknown male DNA profile.
I was so excited that all that hard work that everybody had put into this case, we finally have DNA of our suspect.
Sergeant Sean Isaac.
I was very relieved to find that we did actually get DNA evidence, but still we had to find out who it came from.
The first step was to compare the DNA profile to the person that had lived under suspicion for so long, Frank Trotter. When the results came back, everyone was shocked.
Wasn't him. Wasn't him.
Frank Trotter was relieved by the news. In a statement, he said he loved Sandy very much. She brought joy to everyone and was a wonderful mother and grandmother. Losing her has left a hole that can never be filled. With Trotter eliminated as a suspect, the team entered the profile into the National DNA Database. But once again, they hit a roadblock.
We didn't get a match through CODIS on this unknown DNA.
The promising new evidence led nowhere, and the investigation had stalled again.
So now you're starting over again. You're going through your work. You're looking, what did we miss? Where did we miss? Who's my person? I wrote down everybody now that I needed to get a hold of, because I knew I had my suspect's DNA. I just had to get him.
Detective Bushko kept going over the files, hoping he would find that one clue that would help him solve the case. Then, in 2006, investigators got a huge break in the worst way possible. The DNA evidence from Sandy's case was linked to another horrifying crime, a violent sexual assault on a 75-year-old woman.
She said that she was raped and strangled, almost to death.
Investigators couldn't believe it. 8 years later, the man who killed Sandy Bauer had struck again.
It gave us a new focus. Gave us another direction to look in the investigation, basically.
The two crimes had taken place less than a mile apart, and the similarities between the two cases were chilling.
An unknown intruder had entered her house, had beaten her, had choked her, had raped her, and he left her for dead.
But unlike Sandy Bauer, this victim had survived her attack.
Looking at the fact that it was connected to the other homicide, I believe that she was very lucky. I think maybe at one point he had thought that he had killed her.
Sergeant Sean Isaac was the lead investigator on the case. When he arrived at the crime scene, he quickly noticed the unusual way the elderly woman's attacker had entered her home.
The first thing I looked for was any signs of forced entry. And when I got around to the backside of the house, I observed that the air conditioner had been removed from the window and was laying on the ground.
The gap was large enough to allow an intruder to enter. Then, Sergeant Isaac discovered more important evidence inside the house. During the struggle, the survivor had injured her attacker, hitting him in the head with her phone.
And that phone was found next to the couch.
Crime scene investigators were able to collect evidence from the phone.
There was blood on it.
And it was DNA that was extracted from that blood evidence that it connected the sexual assault to Sandy Bauer's murder. Police spoke with a survivor. She described her attacker. Detective Jeff Coplin.
Slender, medium age, and she said he had been wearing a ball cap.
A composite sketch was created, and it was released to the media. And a wave of fear followed the news. The savage predator who killed Sandy Bauer was back. While Detective Bushko thought the latest attack was disturbing, he saw it as an opportunity.
It's like, yes, okay, good. That gives me more evidence. That gives me more evidence. We were getting closer and closer and closer to finding out who this person was, narrowing it down. And I knew it was just a matter of time before we got you.
Investigators also knew it was going to take good old-fashioned police work to find the suspect who was a match.
When you're in a small community, you think that you know everybody, but then somebody will call and give you another name, and you try to run down, where's that person in town? Does that person have an alibi? Was that person in a different city at the time?
It was just about trying to collect DNA. That's how we were going to solve it.
Investigators made the decision to painstakingly test every man whose name appeared anywhere in the case file. But they didn't get a hit.
It was frustrating because we went through a lot of swabs, a lot of names, but we always tried to get out there and take a sample, get a DNA swab. And to my recollection, I don't think anybody ever refused to give a DNA sample. It was really frustrating when those samples came back, no match.
But investigators refused to give up. Even men who were initially interviewed as witnesses were asked for their DNA.
As I continued working the case, I started narrowing my focus down to a few people that were left that we didn't have DNA on.
That included Kelly Small, a handyman who had done work on Sandy's apartment during its renovation.
Kelly Small was a carpenter who lived in the Omak area at the time. He had been employed by Sandy's parents.
He was also a regular at the Caribou Inn, the bar that Sandy had once owned and worked at. He was questioned by police early on in the investigation. At the time, police did a routine sweep of who had recently been there and was known to Sandy.
He was one of the people that were at the bar that night.
Back in 1998, Small had told police that on the night of the murder, he had had a few drinks at the Caribou Inn and arrived home around midnight.
Kelly told investigators that he had left the bar and gone straight home to his residence in Brewster, Washington, which is about a 30-minute drive, and then he went to bed.
Small's story placed him more than 30 miles from the crime scene when the attack had taken place. But as Detective Jeff Copeland reread other statements in the case file, he found a contradiction in Kelly Small's timeline. A friend of Sandy's had mentioned an argument Small had had with his wife the next morning.
Kelly had gotten in trouble from his wife the next day because he had not gotten home until 4 o'clock in the morning. So there's a fairly substantial discrepancy there over what time he got home, because if he would have left the Caribou at about 11:30, he should have been home by midnight.
Detective Copeland asks Small to come in for a routine interview to clear up the confusion between the two reports. His demeanor during the questioning raised a lot of red flags.
He was nervous during the interview. He kept looking at his watch, and I noticed his hands were shaking.
Although Small's behavior was troubling and his story still had several inconsistencies, any doubts Detective Copeland had were minimized when Small agreed to provide a sample of his DNA for comparison with the evidence.
I expected him to fully comply. The only oddities to me at that point were the discrepancy in the time that he got home and his nervousness.
But less than 24 hours after Kelly Small left the interrogation room, Detective Copeland got a call that would change the course of the investigation. Kelly Small had vanished, and even those closest to him had no idea where he had gone. On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste. So here's a little taste of all the delicious possibilities. Juicy, hand-picked heirloom tomatoes. Seared certified Angus steak over aged cheddar mashed potatoes. Or how about fresh dough stretched by hand for every house-made pizza? Is your mouth watering yet? From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread or a fully loaded bagel. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it's up to 19 grams of protein, but it is. You wouldn't believe it has 11 to 32 grams of fiber, but it does. Hero Bread makes loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with taste, but without all the net carbs. We're talking 0 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. With Hero Bread, there are no compromises, just flavor. There's none of the stiff baked goods you'd expect from better-for-you brands. There's just the soft, fluffy bread you crave. Plus, small batch drops of indulgent favorites, like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero Croissant and 3-gram net carb Hero Pain au Chocolat. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code IHEART at checkout. That's code IHEART at hero.co. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
Detective Jeff Copeland.
Kelly's wife had reported him as a missing person. Mrs. Small said that Kelly had told her that he was going to the store and he never did come home.
Small had gone on the run within hours of leaving the police station. The timing didn't appear to be a coincidence.
It seemed to be connected with my homicide investigation. I instantly got goosebumps.
A nationwide manhunt was launched, but Small was nowhere to be found.
There was no activity on his cell phone, no activity on bank cards, checking accounts. He was just gone.
Police feared that a deadly predator was on the loose.
Suspicion was growing almost by the minute.
But just when it appeared that Small had slipped through investigators' fingers, he suddenly showed up with a simple explanation for his disappearance.
He said that he had been stressed out about money and had left town to go think.
But investigators weren't buying Small's story. And the crime lab's test results backed up their instincts.
His DNA had matched both the DNA on the scene of Sandy Bauer's death and the suspect in the 2006 sexual assault.
The DNA report was enough to make an arrest in a case that had tormented law enforcement and Sandy's family for 12 long years.
I was elated. That is a culmination of a lot of people's work over a lot of years.
But when investigators brought Kelly Small into the interrogation room for a second time, they held back their strongest evidence. Detective Copland began by calmly asking a few carefully scripted questions designed to remove any defense the handyman might have for his DNA being present at the crime scene. Small had done work on the apartment before Sandy lived there.
Did you do any work on her apartment after she moved in?
No.
From the time she moved in, you weren't inside her apartment?
No.
And another of Small's answers seemed to explain one of the biggest mysteries of the case, how Sandy's killer had entered her apartment.
How did you get in and out of the apartment while you were working there? A key.
Yeah.
Police later discovered that the key had never been returned. Small's answers allowed Detective Copland to drop his bombshell, DNA results that linked him to the sexual assault case and Sandy's murder.
And explain to me how your DNA is in her apartment.
Can be.
It is. I got the hit yesterday. We had submitted your DNA to the lab.
Not my DNA in there.
This story isn't gonna work, Kelly. It's not.
If you're trying to get me to make a confession, I'm not making a confession.
Well,
something I didn't do.
Mr. Small adamantly denied it. It was obvious that he was not telling the truth.
In fact, Small's statement was ultimately just as telling as a confession. Kelly Small was arrested for murder. Sandy Bauer's sons were shocked when they heard the news. They knew Small and his family and never could have imagined that he was capable of killing their mother. Sandy's son, Nick Adams.
I did know him. His family's been in the area for a while. I actually worked with his wife when I was a teenager.
At Small's trial, they had a hard time coming face to face with the man they thought they knew. Sandy's son, Frank Adams.
I think the hardest part was actually being in the same room as a murderer. Knowing, and then what goes through your head and what was his, you know, why? I mean, why pretty much is the question. Why would somebody do something like that? And then to just have him sitting there, you know, it's just, that was the hardest part for me.
Although 47-year-old Kelly Small pled not guilty, jurors followed the evidence and convicted him of first-degree murder. After more than a decade, Sandy's sons finally got justice for their mother.
Just a big, overwhelming relief that now we could put this to rest. Someone is going to pay for it.
For Detective Bushko, the guilty verdict marked the end of a long journey that spanned most of his career. Officer Jim Bushko.
You've worked your career trying to solve this one case, which has stumped you. And now you have your guy. You're going to give the family closure so they can move on, so that they don't feel abandoned. And a lot of emotions gratitude, happiness, you know, excitement, you know, team well done.
Small was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, which was a huge relief for Sandy's son.
The person who did this horrendous crime can't do it to anybody else.
During his sentencing hearing, the judge spoke directly to the convicted killer.
He said, "You're going to prison, and after prison, you're going to hell."
Investigators believe that Small is a monster. Sergeant Sean Isaac.
To be able to lead a normal life with a wife and kids, but yet have this monster side of him to abuse elderly women to the point of killing one and almost killing a second one. I guess the police side of me would like to know what in his background caused this kind of dysfunction in his personality. Did something happen as a kid that he has aggression towards elderly women? Or, you know, I'd like to go back. I'd like to be able to know what in his childhood, if anything, would cause a person to do something like this.
Only Kelly Small will ever know why he killed Sandy Bauer. But investigators do have a theory of how the horrifying crime unfolded.
I believe that he left the Caribou and drove to Sandy's apartment. It's very possible that the key that he never gave back was used to enter the residence. Mr. Small propositioned Sandy. She refused. I believe at that point he began assaulting her, and that led to her death.
Kelly Small's conviction was a culmination of years of hard work and determination by every investigator who worked on the case.
There was an immense amount of teamwork that went into this investigation.
He's off the street. He's not going to hurt another woman again. He's done.
But for Sandy's sons, nothing will ever ease the pain of losing their vivacious mother.
My mom was kind of the one that held everything together family-wise. After that, everything just kind of split apart.
It's hard not to focus on all the things Kelly Small took away from them that night.
All the grandkids missing out on their grandmother. Life still happens that she's not a part of. I don't wish she was here. She missed a lot.
I miss most probably her being there daily. Just, you know, guidance. She was a wonderful mother, that's for sure. Caring and outgoing, and yeah, we miss her every day.
In a separate trial, a jury also found Kelly Small guilty of the sexual assault that DNA testing had connected with Sandy's murder. Law enforcement continues to investigate if there are any other unsolved violent crimes he may have been involved in. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and review. And if you want more information on today's case, visit facebook.com/paulazanofficial or just click the link in the episode description. I'm Paula Zahn. Please join us again next Wednesday when we're back on the case, the podcast.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste. So here's a little taste of all the delicious possibilities. Juicy, hand-picked heirloom tomatoes. Seared certified Angus steak over aged cheddar mashed potatoes. Or how about fresh dough stretched by hand for every house-made pizza? Is your mouth watering yet? From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Every small business starts with a dream and the courage to chase it. But even the strongest dreams need protection. That's why The Hartford has been a trusted partner for more than 1 million small business owners across America. From retail shops to financial professionals, The Hartford understands that every business is unique. Their customized coverage options help protect what matters most: your work, your people, and your future. Because when life throws the unexpected your way, you deserve a partner that helps you stand strong. Help protect your dream. Visit thehartford.com/smallbusiness for a quote today.
You know what quality feels like. You can see it in the way a fabric moves. Recognize it in a flawless fit and appreciate it in the details that make our styles unique. That kind of quality doesn't happen by accident. It happens with imagination, creativity, and intention. At Coldwater Creek, it's the design standard we've honored for over 40 years. Our rich mountain heritage has shaped how we think about clothing from the very beginning, with a commitment to quality that never quits. Exceptional fabrics, considered design, silhouettes we've made our own. The signature touches that set each piece apart and styles that are distinctively Coldwater Creek. For a wardrobe you can count on season after season, visit coldwatercreek.com. Shop new arrivals and save 15% on purchases $75 or more with code IHEART.